is New Media Beat on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm John DeLiso.
And I'm Samantha Stock.
What's on the menu this week, Samantha?
We have 7 courses of media news today. The first course will be your report about Pinterest.
Pinterest thinks that teens spend too much time scrolling in school.
What's Pinterest going to do about that? Are teens big users of Pinterest? We'll find out.
What's on the menu after my Pinterest report?
Our second course is about therapy. Chat therapy.
That's chat bot therapy.
Therapy and chat bots. We are going to talk about how therapeutic chat bots with Kat Espinel. Will AI-powered chatbots replace human therapists? Can you tell ChatGPT all your troubles? Will artificial intelligence lend a sympathetic ear to our struggles with mental health?
Our third course will be a plate full of fast fashion and e-commerce. Super shopper Samantha Stock will show us her news haul about Shein and Temu. What are Shein and Temu, Samantha?
Don't rush the third course, John. I will explain Shein and Temu when it's my turn. But I have to warn you that I will have bad news for all you Shein and Temu fans out there. Fast fashion is supposed to be cheap and quick. It's about to get slow and expensive.
Can these giant Chinese shopping platforms survive Trump's trade war? Will Americans pay more to wait longer for the same stuff?
Our fourth course is AI news. Deborah Flamenbaum noticed that when she asked ChatGPT a question, it answered her in a very human way.
Has OpenAI built a chatbot with personality? Is that creepy or comforting? Do we want our AI friends to have a winning personality? ChatGPT thinks the answer is yeah, baby.
I am getting full, and we still have 3 news courses to go on New Media Beat. I think I can make room. What's up next, John?
There's always room for one more news story. Our fifth course is a report from Mohamed Doucouré, one of our sports media reporters. This is an AI story about one of the new apps being used in sports media today.
Mohamed will introduce us to a new AI app that is dubbing sports audio into different languages in real time. Does it work? Will these AI-generated voices put announcers and translators out of a job? Will they sound like native speakers?
Sports media is less filling, so we have room for a helping of sports news today. Ryan Forte has whipped up a report about ESPN in the New Media Beat kitchen today.
ESPN is launching a new online service for sports fans called Flagship. Flagship is a direct-to-consumer streaming service that is designed to attract younger sports fans. Can Flagship attract a younger demographic to ESPN before all the older TV watchers pass away?
What do we have for dessert today, Samantha?
Our seventh course is about a watch. New Media Beat reporter Chloe Cutting is going to introduce us to Alco Watch.
What's Alco Watch?
Alco Watch is a smartwatch app that tracks your alcohol consumption. Chloe will explain it for us all today on New Media Beat.
And that's the menu for our 7-course meal. Tipping is allowed, but please, no substitutions.
All this and a bag of chips coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. Let's kick this off with your report about Pinterest.
I am ready.
You are here to talk about Pinterest and teenagers. Pinterest is concerned about young people today. Are young people spending too much time staring at their screens, especially during school hours? Most of the people here in Studio A with us today are staring at their phones right now. Pinterest is a social media platform. What can a social media company do about teens spending too much time on social? John, can you give us a brief intro to Pinterest and get us started? How popular is Pinterest?
Yeah, so Pinterest is a lifestyle app. It's a social media app where people can get inspiration for projects, they can learn recipes, and just save inspiration for various different things. It's not the most popular social media app, but it's definitely popular among women and mothers.
What is this new message Pinterest is posting? Will it be successful?
So Pinterest is testing a new pop-up message for U.S. and Canadian users that are aged 13 to 17. This message is going to appear every Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m., which are the typical school hours for Americans and Canadians. The message is going to read, "Focus is a beautiful thing. Stay in the moment by putting Pinterest down and pausing notifications until the school bell rings." And while this message can be dismissed by students, it still is meant to serve as a deterrent for students that use social media in the classroom. But there is still a question on how effective it's going to be since it can be dismissed.
Gotcha. And why is Pinterest trying to reduce teens' time on the app?
So Pinterest has really prided itself on being a healthy alternative to other social media platforms. They really want to reduce classroom distractions. The CEO, Bill Reddy, has said that students will benefit from fewer digital distractions. It'll improve their learning outcomes. It'll increase their attention span and increase focus. Pinterest was actually one of the first to support the Kids Online Safety Act, which was a proposed legislation aimed at protecting minors who use social media. Pinterest is actually one of the first social media to proactively discourage teen social media use during school hours. So,
is Pinterest a popular app among teens?
So Pinterest is definitely not as popular as apps like TikTok or Instagram. It still has not as many users, but it still has significant usership among young teens. According to Pinterest, they said that approximately 40% of their global monthly active users are Gen Z, which are people born between the years 1997 to 2012. So especially those younger Gen Zs are more teenagers. So,
what is Pinterest's stance on teens using their platform?
So Pinterest is actually a very good advocate for teens that use social media. They really pride themselves on protecting their young users. So accounts for users aged 13 to 15 are private by default, and they have no option to go public. Users aged 16 to 17 also have private accounts by default, but they can change their settings if they wish to go public. They also do not feature any face-altering filters because they don't feel it's healthy to promote unrealistic beauty standards. And it's also, Pinterest as a company has been supportive of legislation that limits classroom phone use.
How do Instagram and TikTok approach teen users differently?
So Instagram and TikTok offer some similar protections to teen users, like private default accounts, restricted content, limited DMs, things like that. But Pinterest stands out because it focuses more on content, not followers, likes, or doom scrolling. Pinterest avoids addictive doom scrolling and favors instructional, positive content. For instance, if you're on the home page of Pinterest, you're really only going to see posts that you're kind of interested in, and it's topics that you're interested in. You're not going to see really negative, toxic posts, things like that. So Pinterest school hours pause is a pretty bold move. Obviously, there is still a question if teens will follow this message or if they're just going to ignore the message. But if it works, it could definitely be a model for other social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram to follow. For Numidi Beat, I'm John DeLiso. Back to you, Samantha.
Thank you, John. Kat Espinal is up with her story about chat therapy. Why would you turn to artificial intelligence to deal with your mental health? Is AI a good listener? Can a chatbot understand your pain? Is a chatbot cheaper than a human therapist? Kat, let's start with a very simple introductory question. What is TherapyBot?
Hey, Samantha. TherapyBot is a AI-powered chatbot made to help people who need someone to talk to. It was created basically to have an easier alternative than having to go see a therapist.
How did people respond to the AI therapists in the study?
Some did very well. Some felt like it was easier to talk to an AI-powered chatbot instead of a human. Some felt like because they were weren't talking to an actual person, they could be more open about it, and they felt less judged when it came to talking about any type of anxiety or depression or bad thoughts that they were dealing with. And other people felt like they would be more comfortable talking to someone in person, which I completely understand, because there are things that you're able to talk to with a human that maybe aren't the same with AI.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to that myself. What kind of therapy techniques are these bots trained to use?
A couple of the techniques they were trained to use were CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, which is like the most common technique that's used in most therapies. Bots use CBT often to ask users to identify like their automatic thoughts, or like just to track their mood or how they're feeling throughout their day. Another technique that they were taught was mindfulness and meditation. Many bots offered like breathing exercises, body scans. They even were made to help guide people's meditation and like to reduce stress and anxiety, and to check in on you like throughout the day to see how you're feeling, especially if you're having like a stressful day or stressful week.
Can a therapy bot fully replace a human therapist?
Personally, I feel like it's too soon to tell, but honestly, I don't think so. I think that the AI chatbots are honestly just there as an extra reinforcement. If someone maybe is too scared to go talk to someone in person, or it just feels like they're more comfortable, you know, typing with like an AI chatbot. But I don't feel like they can replace a human therapist. Can they help a human therapist? Yeah, like maybe if like your therapist isn't available for you or like cancels an appointment, maybe you can go to this AI powered chatbot and just talk to them, see how you're feeling. But no, I don't think they can fully replace a human therapist. For New Media B, I'm Kat Espinal. Back to you, Samantha.
Thanks, Kat.
Let's talk about fast fashion, tariffs, and online shopping with my co-host, Samantha Stock. She's going to talk about shopping and about tariffs. America loves to shop for clothes online. Not all the e-commerce giants are American. Some of the most popular fast fashion platforms are Chinese. Our president is changing the rules of global trade. Are you a Shein shopper? How about Temu? Lots of Americans love shopping on Shein and Temu. According to Statista, 60% of U.S. online shoppers have used Temu. 10% have shopped on Temu. On the other hand, a lot of Americans, 58% to be exact, have never even heard of Shein. And even more Americans, 64%, have not heard of Temu. Samantha, are you a Shein or Temu shopper? What's the attraction?
Hi, John. So I am a Shein shopper. I'm not a Temu shopper. I shop on Shein because it is extremely cheap and my packages will be here within 2-3 days.
Yep, that's convenient. So, what are Shein and Temu?
Shein and Temu are both online shopping platforms that offer a huge variety of fashion and other things like home goods and just like necessities for life. They're known for their extremely low prices for anything ranging from clothes to now furniture. Shein is more famous for their clothing, and then Temu is more of like lifestyle home goods. Both of these platforms depend on a direct-to-consumer model, which is the reason why they're able to sell items at such low prices. When I first ordered my package on Shein, I thought it would be a scam, honestly, but 2 days later, I ended up getting a package of like maybe 200 items, and it was like $100. So I think it's definitely worth it.
Why are these companies raising their prices?
These companies are raising their prices due to the global trade rules and tariffs. The price increase started on April 25th of 2025, and people all over social media are now talking about it.
What are the public's opinion on this? Is there controversy on social media about it, this news?
There have been many different opinions on the rising prices on Shein and Temu. Many have showed sadness and frustration as it's one of the very few apps that's affordable. The one main concern is going to be the quality of the clothes and the items. Because although they're very cheap, the quality is not great. So now if the prices are going up, people are worried that they're getting something that with bad quality, and now the prices are even higher. So some TikTok accounts have been posting about it, getting thousands of likes and comments of people complaining about the price changes, complaining about the quality, and just things like that.
Will the price adjustments affect shopping habits?
Although it definitely stinks to see the prices go up, I think it'll definitely help shopping habits. With Shein and Temu now being on apps, they have different things like games you can play to like win free items. Then you buy two items, you get one free. So they really just like know how to reel you in. So I think with the prices going up, that will definitely help. And also with everything being so cheap, I feel like people are now just buying things that they don't really need. So I think people will start to become more selective with their items, which is a good thing. For New Media Beat, I'm Samantha Stock. Back to you, John.
Thank you, Samantha. Up next, we have artificial intelligence news from Deborah Flamenbaum. ChatGPT is the most popular AI application, and it's changing all the time. Artificial intelligence is getting smarter all the time. But this story is not about accuracy. It's about personality. ChatGPT learning how to communicate with humans. It seems that ChatGPT has grown a personality. What does that mean? Is it creepy, or is it just AI being friendly? Why did OpenAI train ChatGPT to engage in casual banter just like a human? Deborah, how did you discover that ChatGPT had a personality?
I discovered that ChatGPT had a personality after I tried typing in a prompt and it gave me an answer that I had not expected. The new technology advancements in ChatGPT is why ChatGPT is getting a personality. The technology impersonates having a personality. For example, if a person says, talk to me like I'm a travel agent, ChatGPT will respond in using verbs and nouns in a similar setting to that.
What are the new technological advancements in ChatGPT?
ChatGPT can have a personality by using natural language processing to generate responses based on patterns learned from a vast amount of texts, data that the user can also give specific instructions asking for it. For example, a user could say, I want ChatGPT to respond like a teacher grading my essay, and ChatGPT will try to do what it's being asked.
So what are the dangers of ChatGPT having a personality?
ChatGPT can give minors access to information that is adult content. It can also be a little bit creepy, as you said earlier. And it can also, by having a personality, it could also spread misinformation. One good thing, though, about ChatGPT having a personality is it can help people feel less alone or help you train for a job interview.
How does this make ChatGPT more marketable?
This makes ChatGPT more marketable because people will spend more time on ChatGPT because of the personality and will give ChatGPT more information that can then be used by ChatGPT to make its product more marketable.
What happens when ChatGPT's personality is used?
The answer is based on how the user uses it. When ChatGPT's personality is used, if it's used to respond a specific way to a prompt, like to act like a friend, the person will get a response similar to a friend. Other times, it could be used to just tell a joke or a silly comment with an otherwise normal output. For New Media Beat, I'm Deborah Feinbaum. Back to you, John.
Thanks, Deborah. It's time to talk about sports media with Mohamed Ducouré. There's a new AI-powered application being used in live sports media. Is it a translation and dubbing app that can convert an announcer's voice intro into another language in real time? Mohamed, can you begin with a brief introduction to this dubbing app being used for live sports coverage? Who's using it? What does it do? And what is it called?
This new application called AI Dubbing makes live sports audio more readily available to all. Through real-time translations, AI is able to translate what commentators are saying to a variety of different languages. Sports companies believe that AI is the solution to their problem of not being accessible to everybody. Sports companies all over the world are using it, and there will be many more that follow.
Is this going to take jobs from commentators?
This application isn't necessarily taken from commentators, but instead spreading the excitement from live commentary to people who aren't able to find commentary in their language. From indigenous languages to some of the most foreign languages, this new innovation will change the sports world.
How accurate is this AI dubbing?
AI Media, one of the companies that focuses on AI dubbing, says they can isolate dialogue from noisy environments such as live sports, music concerts, and news feeds. This allows for little to no mistake as the speaker's voice is able to be the main focus. With how noisy sports stadiums can be, this makes translations a lot easier.
Where has this AI dub been used?
This has been used all over sports, from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, Eurovision Sports Streaming Platform, boxing with global streaming service DAZN, Sinclair's Tennis Channel, and soccer from the MLS to League One. These are some of the biggest services in the world who all want to be the first in line to the future of sports commentary.
Oh, wow. So it sounds like a lot of companies have really taken advantage of this new platform. Does this dubbing incorporate culture in its job, or does it simply translate word for word what comes out of another announcer's mouth?
Cam.ai, one of the live dubbing companies, states that models ensure that every piece of content retains the original speaker's tone, emotion, and authenticity, tailoring translations to be culturally contextual and omitting the homogeneous nature of AI-driven translations. This is great for fans that might worry that part of their culture might be lost to translation. They are able to listen to these translations with greater clarity. For New Media Beat, I'm Mohamed Ducouré. Back to you, Samantha.
Thank you, Mohamed. That's not enough sports news for New Media Beat listeners. Up next, we have ESPN news from Ryan Forte. ESPN is rolling out a new streaming service. What is it? And why does ESPN think it is a game changer? Let's ask Ryan. Stay with us. Let's talk sports with Ryan Forte, our New Media Beat sports media guy. Ryan, ESPN is a cable TV giant with many channels of linear TV. Most of its audience are TV watchers. But those TV sports fans are getting older and less attractive to advertisers every day. Where are the young consumers? Are they watching TV? Sometimes. What could get them hooked on ESPN sports coverage? How about a special direct-to-consumer streaming service? Ryan, what is ESPN's new streaming service called, and when is it expected to launch?
So ESPN's new streaming service is called Flagship, and it plans to be launched in the summer of 2025, so later this year.
Cool. How will Flagship differ from ESPN's existing digital offerings like ESPN Plus?
Flagship will offer access to all the ESPN linear channels. So like, for example, ESPN, ESPN2, and ESPNU for all the college sports. In addition to ESPN Plus content, it will also include interactive features such as sports betting through ESPN Bet, live event ticketing, and merchandise shopping all on one platform.
Why is ESPN launching Flagship, and who is the target audience for the service?
So ESPN is launching Flagship just to keep up with the growing number of cord cutters, people who plan to move away from traditional cable TV in favor of streaming. The goal is to provide a complete digital sports experience for fans who prefer to watch content on demand and across devices.
How does the launch of Flagship fit into Disney's larger media strategy?
It goes into direct relationships with the consumers by offering a centralized interactive platform, and Disney aims to stay competitive in the evolving digital media space and create a more personalized experience for sports fans. And for New Media Beat, I'm Ryan Forte. Back to you, Samantha.
Thank you, Ryan. That's all for our sports coverage for today. If you want more, you can go turn to ESPN. Now we have something completely different. Chloe Cutting is here with us in Studio A for our final report of the day. Chloe, what is an Alka watch?
So an Alka watch is not your typical Apple Watch situation. The Alka watch is a wearable device that claims to track your blood alcohol content, aka your BAC, in real time from your wrist. So it works, researchers from the University of Bristol said that it works with the use of ecological momentary assessment, EMA for short, and basically it's just designed to collect drinking data throughout the day instead of relying on your memory or like breathalyzers.
Oh, that's really interesting. Who is the target audience for this device?
So researchers say that it's for a range of folks, from college students, casual drinkers, people in recovery. A study from the National Library of Medicine actually found that college students were pretty open to wearing it in the long term, and they logged over 11,000 hours of alcohol data, which is really not a small sample size, honestly.
How accurate and reliable is the Alka watch compared to other BAC testing tools?
So standard methods for measuring BAC, such as the breathalyzers and blood tests, are useful, but they can be faulty. So, for example, breathalyzers can be affected by factors such as temperature, your breathing patterns, and that can lead to inaccuracies. But on the contrary, the Alka watch allows for continuous self-reporting data, so it can provide more of a comprehensive picture of an individual's drinking habits over time. For New Media Beat, I am Chloe Cutting. Back to you, Samantha.
Thank you, Chloe.
Thanks for hosting with me this week, Samantha.
Thank you, John. It's been fun.
Thanks, all of you, for listening to New Media Beat. Our show is co-produced by three people, Jaden Nunez, myself, and Henry Wilson. Our fabulous engineer is Jaden Nunez. My co-host is Samantha Stock.
Today, we heard reports from Chloe Cutting, John DeLiso, Muhammad Ducaray, Kat Espinel, Deborah Flamenbaum, Ryan Forte, Samantha Stock.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all our podcasts.
Stay tuned for more great programming coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.